Great. I didn't think I was going to be doing this like Oprah, but we have so many folks here. A lot of commitment shown to the region, which is a great thing. We're really happy to have all of you here, ambassadors. My name is Carl Meacham. I'm the director here of the Americas Program. And just before I begin, I just want to take a moment to mention the events that happened yesterday in Oklahoma and the tragedy that folks are dealing with. Most of the countries that are up here that are represented here today can relate to the suffering that we saw yesterday over there. They've all dealt with similar natural disasters, so it's nothing new to folks, but it's still a horrible thing, and I just wanted to acknowledge these folks and the terrible situation that they're probably dealing with today. But on to today's event. Today's a special occasion. Folks in Washington who usually follow or comment on Latin America and many who make policy towards the region and the different branches of government generally still tend to focus on the same issues when looking at the region. Whether it's security concerns in Central America or relations towards Cuba, both still important, headlines and discussions seem to be focused disproportionately on many of the issues that we were even talking about 20 years ago. This is unfortunate, as I don't think that we're paying enough attention to the dynamic changes taking place across the region today. Sure, there are challenges. Just look at places like Venezuela and Argentina. But in many countries in the region, good things are happening. And one of those good things is what we're here to talk about today. Today, the Pacific Alliance, consisting of Chile, Colombia, Mexico, and Peru, begins its seventh meeting in 2 years in Cali, Colombia. Since launching in Lima in April 2011, the alliance has generated a significant amount of buzz that is moving beyond the rhetoric of past regional agreements and will allow the countries involved to integrate their economies, to increase scale, as well as allow themselves to serve as an important commercial nexus between the Asia-Pacific and Latin America. Perhaps The Economist put it best in an article last week when it stated, behind the excitement in the sense that the Pacific is the sense that the Pacific Alliance is a hard-nosed business deal rather than the usual gassy rhetoric of Latin American summitry. I would add that the alliance is proof of how far parts of the region have come, and it's an example of the good things that the region can do on its own. A handout that everybody has in front of them highlights what is at stake. The bloc, which jointly represents about 36% of Latin American GOP, registered 5% growth in 2012 and is expected to nearly match that figure this year. In 2012, the four countries involved also received 26% of the foreign direct investment in the region. While I could provide more figures, I think that these help to show the dynamic nature of the agreement. The Pacific Alliance clearly is a results-oriented venture. So to talk about the Pacific Alliance, the challenges, the future of the organization, I'm very pleased to have with us today the Ambassador of Colombia, Carlos Urrutia, the Ambassador of Chile, Felipe Bulnes, the Ambassador of Peru, Harold Forsyth, and from the Mexican Embassy's Economic Affairs Section, Antonio Ortiz Mena. These individuals represent the founding nations of the Pacific Alliance. I'm also very happy to have Costa Rica's ambassador to the United States, Muni Figueras. Costa Rica is more than likely to be admitted as a full member of the alliance, is my understanding, during the meeting in Cali. And I'm more than happy to have the ambassador here to share her views from the perspective of a likely member of the organization. So everybody should have a copy of the bios of the ambassadors and representatives. So in the interest of time, I won't go into their very impressive backgrounds. Suffice it to say that everyone here has the expertise necessary to talk about these issues. So since Colombia is hosting the week's summit, Ambassador Urrutia will lead off with an overview of what to expect from the week's meetings. We will then go to opening remarks from the different ambassadors. Ambassador Bulnes will go first, Forsyth, after Figueres, and we will finish up with Mr. Ortiz Mena. Following our speakers' presentations, I'll kick it off with the Q&A. So time is short, and I just want to mention a couple of housekeeping matters before we begin. Today's event is on the record, and we'll be posting the full audio later today on the Americas Program website. For the Q&A, please identify yourself, and please provide your affiliation. For those sitting around the table, wait for an intern to give you the microphone before you ask questions. Again, I wanted to thank everybody here. And with that, Ambassador Urrutia, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Carl. And thank you, thanks to the to CSIS and to you specifically for your leadership in organizing this conference. First of all, I'd like to express our heartfelt condolences to the families and communities in Oklahoma. It's a devastating, terrible event that took place yesterday only. And of course, looking at the pictures, looking at the footage that has been presented, we're all devastated. So our condolences to them and to the American people, of course. There is no better time to engage on a discussion about the Pacific Alliance. As we speak, the Vice Ministers of Trade and Foreign Affairs of Colombia, Chile, Mexico, and Peru are meeting in Cali, Colombia, to finalize negotiations in preparation of the 7th Presidential Summit of the Alliance, which we will host on Thursday. That day, Colombia will receive from Chile the presidency pro tempore of the alliance. We're excited to have the participation of the 4 presidents of the alliance, as well as the heads of state of observer countries, Spain, Canada, Guatemala, and Costa Rica. Among the goals for the summit will be for the heads of state to announce the conclusion of the trade negotiations. The idea is to have the agreement ready by June, so that 90% of the tariff universe becomes duty-free, with the remaining 10% benefits from schedules quickly leading to zero tariffs. We understand the alliance is much more than a trade agreement. It is a dynamic process to create a deep integration among our nations so that we can better engage with the rest of the world. We don't see it as an FTA, but rather as an open process that serves our goals of integrating with the world, particularly with the Asia Pacific. As a matter of fact, just this week, our Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced that Colombia will share its diplomatic representation in Ghana with Chile, Mexico, and Peru, which didn't have a presence in that country. In reciprocity, Chile has offered its embassies in Algeria and Morocco, while Peru offered its embassy in Vietnam and Mexico its representation in Singapore. By harmonizing the rules of the 4 countries, we will eliminate many unnecessary barriers to trade so that the alliance can really operate as a consolidated market with common rules that will foster more foreign investment, further growth, development, and competitiveness for our economies. The Pacific Alliance also has an active and continuously evolving agenda in other areas, such as education, cooperation, tourism, simplification of trade procedures, and standardization of taxation systems, among others. And I'm not going to talk about the details of these initiatives, because I am sure that my colleagues will have a lot to say about them. But let me tell you that we are already seeing impressive results in these areas as well. For Colombia, the alliance is an integral part of the internationalization strategy that we began over a decade ago. It is in line with our objectives of inserting our economy into global value chains and creating an enabling environment for private initiative based on legal certainty and investment protection. Our countries are located in a privileged zone for trading within the hemisphere and from it with other countries in the broader Pacific. Member countries already have strong ties across the region and are actively seeking to enhance their integration. Just to mention some examples, Chile, Peru, and Mexico have trade agreements with Japan and are all members of APEC and TPP. Chile and Peru have free trade agreements with China and Singapore. For Colombia, the alliance represents an important milestone in its internationalization strategy with the Asia Pacific. We recently signed an FTA with South Korea and are in the process of negotiating with Japan, but we certainly need to expand our presence in the region. While in 2012 in Peru and Chile exported to Japan respectively over $2 billion and $9 billion, Colombia's exports to that market were only $360 million. And while Mexico and Chile exported nearly $6 billion and $18 billion respectively to China, Colombian exports were only $3 billion. We expect that the alliance will improve Colombia's access into some of the most dynamic markets in Asia and to be able to join TPP and APEC. The alliance, however, does not stop there. The agreement has gained international attention to the point that countries such as Spain, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Canada, Guatemala, and Uruguay have already joined as observer countries. Panama and Costa Rica have been granted Observer Candidate Plus status, or Observer Candidate status, and it is expected that they will join as full members soon. Moreover, six additional countries, which include Honduras, Portugal, France, Ecuador, Paraguay, and El Salvador, have recently requested observer status likewise. For the future, the Pacific Alliance countries have set their vision towards deepening their integration with other regions. In that sense, the idea for the alliance to develop common agendas with other countries. For example, our governments have already identified collaboration opportunities with Spain on the areas of trade and investment promotion. The alliance is a fresh and dynamic initiative based on a commitment to deep integration on issues overlooked by traditional FTAs. Its members share a market orientation and believe that free trade is the best way to achieve prosperity for all. Thank you very much for your presence today, and we welcome eventually your questions and comments.
Ambassador Bulnes.
Thank you, Carl. I want to join Ambassador Urrutia to express my gratitude to CSIS for organizing this event, and also thank you for inviting me. And also I want to express the Chilean people's condolences to the U.S. people and to the Oklahoma families for the event that took place yesterday. And going to the subject matter that bring us today here, after what Ambassador Urrutia said about the Pacific Alliance, which has been a more than complete and thorough analysis of this initiative, I would like to highlight some additional points on top of what Ambassador Urrutia already said. One is that you have seen many times presidents or political leaders talking about integration or embarking on integration initiatives, but then what it follows is a lack of action. In this case, that gap between rhetoric and action is not the case. We have seen a strong correlation between what the president has been saying and what has been achieved. And I could claim that not even the most optimistic person would have dreamed that we will be achieving what we are achieving at this point. There has been 6 presidential summits, 10 high-level group summits, and also 10 technical negotiation rounds. So the pace and the achievement are quite impressive. The second point that I would like to highlight is the role of the private sector in this initiative. The private sector is not only following the process, which is a normal pattern, but also they are participating by setting priorities. They are coming with proposals in terms of, for instance, tax rules, for instance, initiatives that the Pacific Alliance should undertake vis-a-vis the Asia-Pacific region, and also they are proposing common rules for specific industries. So the role of the private sector has been key, and there has been set a business council that is again, not only following, but setting the agenda or part of the agenda of this initiative. A new factor, but is a growing factor, is the IDB, that is starting to participate in this process in its advisory capacity, and it's coming, I said, recently, but with solutions to different technical problems that are arising. So this is also a new good factor that allow us to be very optimistic about the future pace and achievements that this process is going to have. Additional factor that I would like to highlight is related to the approach that this negotiation has been taken. And what I'm referring to, there are two ways to develop this bilateral or multilateral negotiations. One is the early harvest approach, and the other one is the single undertaking. The single undertaking means that you wait till the end, till everything is closed, to deem that there is an agreement and that those provisions can come into effect. In this case, we're taking the early harvest approach, which means that once some chapters are closed, they come into effect immediately. And that's why Ambassador Urrutia said that we expect that tomorrow the presidents will reach an agreement that 90% of the products will be zero tariff, and the 10% of the products will reach the same status within the next 7 years. So this early harvest approach is also something very, very interesting, and it means that we don't have to wait till the end to see this agreement in force. Another factor, I don't want to overspend my time, is the focus of this initiative. It's not only the Asia-Pacific, which is the main driver, but also is the focus within the four countries. Like The Economist mentioned this past in its past edition, the interregional trade within the four countries is low compared to what is happening in other areas. So the growth potential that this initiative has in terms of its own members is also high. So we have the Asia-Pacific, but also what can happen and transpire within the four countries. And finally, what I would like to mention is that regarding the Asia-Pacific, what we are trying to achieve is, first, we are sure that this initiative, the Pacific Alliance, will enable us to achieve a greater competitiveness to third markets, again, especially taking into account or aiming to Asia-Pacific. Second, that will allow us to take advantage of the economy of scales. Third, that will allow us to jointly promote the investment opportunities that the four countries have. And finally, that will enable us to develop more integrated production change, which also is a huge challenge for our four countries. So we have to say that we are more than happy and optimistic about the future and the current progress that this initiative has achieved so far. Thank you very much.
Ambassador Forsyth.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you for the invitation and thank you for the initiative. I'm very glad to be here. And of course, you know, on behalf of my country, I also join my colleagues in expressing our condolences for the tragic events which took place in Oklahoma yesterday. So their excellencies' remarks have been extremely clear, so they haven't left much for me to say. So, but if I may only add that our region, Latin America as a whole, has a long tradition of multilateral activity, which began even early in the 19th century, even in perhaps 1826, when the so-called Anfictionic Congress of Panama was summoned by our liberator, Simón Bolívar. So we have some experience in multilateral activity, but to some extent, it might be even hard to explain why all this multilateral activity through our history have not been able to relate our countries with progress, with development, with a lot of objectives in which we have been more or less a failure in the past decades. There is OAS. There is a Latin American economic system. there is the Latin American Association of Integration, there is the Andean Group. There are many initiatives that have been undertaken in so many decades. So that is why we have become experts in the so-called Latin American rhetoric. So the success of the Alliance of the Pacific is probably related to a new beginning in which rhetoric is not anymore in place, but just clear and loud results. And we are trying to develop a new type of organization in which concrete steps are to be taken and in which four countries with shared values, with democratic principles, with respect and promotion of human rights, and of course with the same principles in their economic policies and with a strong activity of our private sectors, decide to join forces to create a new form of multilateral activity in our region, which has clearly become a clear example that we're given not only within our own region, but within the world. It has been said, many countries are becoming observers, and I'm extremely glad to see here the ambassador of Costa Rica. Costa Rica is joining our effort just in two more days. So we are following clear examples of success in the world. I remember that several years ago when this initiative began to be expressed, we were very much impressed by the so-called BRIC, which later became the so-called BRICS. And the idea of joining forces, and of joining common strategies for countries with more or less shared values and share objectives in their activity, in their world activity, began to have a special appeal in our countries. So Peru, Chile, Mexico, and Colombia qualify for something like that. So it was more or less easy to develop the strategy, the common strategy. Of course, we continue to be active in some other international activities of our own, mainly political international organizations, also the Organization of American States. But concretely, the Alliance of the Pacific means something different. And in that sense, let me just add that our countries are in the structure of the APEC system. So we look with an impressive appeal to the Pacific Basin. And at the same time, we are also in the TPP process. Not all of us, but Chile, Peru, and Mexico are extremely active in TPP, and we hope that in the near future, the TPP tremendous endeavor will be joined and will be followed by other countries. Just in the last few days, we have finished another round of negotiations of TPP in Peru, which have been successful. Of course, let me point that we have some difficulties in finishing the process of negotiation of such an impressive agreement. But when TPP is ready, TPP will be even stronger than the European Union. And within the framework of TPP, when our tariffs completely disappear, as the ambassador of Chile said, within the structure of the Alliance of the Pacific, our alliance will also mean a tremendous task within the world. So this is what I have to say. Good services, capital, and people in absolute free circulation within our five countries. Thank you.
Ambassador Figueres.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl and CSIS, for this invitation, and congratulations on a very exciting transition from Senator Lugar's office on the Hill to this the world of the think tanks. And condolences, of course, on behalf of the government of Costa Rica to the people and families of Oklahoma for this terrible twister that has twisted their lives so much. Well, I'm the wannabe in the room because we are aspiring to become part, as you know, of the alliance. Our country attaches great importance to the principles and objectives of the alliance, including, most importantly, compliance with the requirements of democracy and the rule of law. We concur with other state members on the significance of deepening trade integration, as well as fostering economic growth, development, and competitiveness. Furthermore, we share the alliance's goal of consolidating a platform to achieve greater integration with the global economy, and particularly with the Asia-Pacific region. Trade between Costa Rica and the member states represented here by my wonderful colleagues of the Pacific Alliance has increased consistently during the last decade. Average growth rate was more than 10% for exports, more than 11% for imports. In 2012, bilateral trade with the group represented almost 8% of Costa Rica's trade with the world, and foreign direct investment originating from the member states into Costa Rica between 2006-2012 accounted for 9.5% of total FDI. And in 2012, the share of FDI from these countries to Costa Rica jumped to 21.4%. So you can see how integrated we already are with these economies. We have, as you know, traditionally an open economy that has paid well in terms of social and economic development. We have 14 trade agreements in total, but within the 14, there are three regional trade agreements, so that means there are many more countries than 14 involved, and including China, as you know. And 40% of the products manufactured in Costa Rica and exported are part of global value chains. So our economy is very open. We're interested in joining TPP. We're interested in joining OECD. We want to be everywhere, because we have found that it pays well to be part of all of these global agreements, especially with like-minded countries like the ones represented here. We're prepared to start the process and expect an invitation, we hope, to adhere to the Pacific Alliance in Cali. this invitation would likely be conducted through a declaration from the heads of state. That's what I've understood is in the process. And it would include first an invitation to start the process to adhere to the alliance as a member state. Second, an instruction to the Council of Ministers of Foreign Affairs and Trade to create a working group which would be responsible for negotiating the terms and conditions and the time frames for Costa Rica's adherence. And thirdly, the immediate incorporation, we hope, of Costa Rica to the negotiations and discussions that are taking place right now within the alliance's working groups. Costa Rica, we think, has the institutional capacity to start this process. We have FTAs with Mexico, Chile, and Peru, and it will enter into force on June 1st, our agreement with Peru. And we will be signing with Colombia on the 23rd in Cali at 6:30 p.m. So we think that we will have been fully accredited to belong to this extremely important group. And I look forward to our discussion. Thank you.
Antonio Ortiz Mena.
Thank you, Carl. Also, I would like to express on behalf of the government of Mexico our condolences and solidarity with the families who have lost loved ones in Oklahoma with the United States for this tragedy. Well, I guess it's always very difficult to be last. Usually get the last word, but almost everything has been said. I'll try and give a sense of some of the initiatives that are being pursued under the Alliance of the Pacific, just to give a sense that it really, really is not just a run-of-the-mill trade and investment agreement. It is indeed very, very ambitious, and things are happening. Mexico is keenly aware of the significance of having, you know, the seamless integration of global production and supply chains. We always compete with our friends from Chile as to who has the largest free trade agreement network. But in any case, we are just keenly aware of the need to have the seamless integration of global production and supply chains. Mexico. In November, ratified the framework agreement for the alliance. I believe we're the first country that did that, and with almost unanimous support from the Mexican Senate. So there's a lot of political impetus in Mexico behind this agreement, and I think that facilitates the achievements that have been taking place. And again, just to give a sense of some things that have been happening, in November 2012, Mexico unilaterally eliminated the visa requirement for visitors from Peru and Colombia, had previously done that for Chile. So we are really trying to facilitate the movement of persons for tourism and for business. We're exploring the joint promotion of trade and investment. Ambassador Bulnes mentioned this, but to have our trade and investment promotion agencies actually working together to promote trade and investment in the region, because sometimes companies look at regions, not only at countries. How does the region look from a company perspective? And the Business Advisory Council will be also critically important to work together with the trade and investment promotion agencies. We are also offering scholarships, exchanges at the undergrad and grad level, and for professor exchanges. So there's a people-to-people contact that will be very, very important. There's a scientific research network that will address issues related to climate change. There are also cooperation initiatives on science, technology, SMEs, and tourism. Three of the four stock exchanges are already linked under the MILA, Mercado Integrado Latinoamericano, that is to say Peru, Colombia, and Chile. Mexico is undertaking some legal changes it needs to do for the Bolsa Mexicana de Valores to be linked with the other stock exchanges. And I would just finalize by saying that, indeed, it's a very ambitious undertaking, but what's striking is that it's actually happening. Results are already there to be seen, and I look forward to the session on Q&A. Thank you, Carl.
Well, I want to show my appreciation for the presentations. I think it was very well done, very factual. But I think that my job is sort of to create a little trouble here and ask some questions that might make people, well, not uncomfortable, but just focus on some things that I think are important to sort of highlight and get your reactions to those things. So many of these agreements in the region are made up of countries that sometimes may not have the same political views. You look at something like Mercosur, and you have a country like Brazil, and then you have a country like Venezuela in it. Could you talk a little bit about the selection process that you guys have for picking some of these countries? When you look at the countries that are in line, they seem to be very similar. They're all doing pretty well economically. They all sort of are following a lot of these issues that have to do with, you know, keeping your growth rates at a certain place. Unemployment is low. Can you explain a little bit what that process is like, or maybe you're just attracting a like-minded group of countries? But could you explain how do you make your agreement appealing to other member countries? Ambassador Urrutia, you want to start?
Well, I don't think, let me say that I won't make comparisons, let's say, but I think the basic understanding here is that there needs to be a true commitment to free trade. It is really what I think unites the four original members, and I think it's the goal that needs to be fulfilled by any aspiring nation that wishes to join the alliance these days. And I think this is precisely the reason why, first Costa Rica as well as Panama will be joining. One of the requirements really was that there needs to be in place free trade agreements with each of the member nations. All of them have to have in place free trade agreements with each other. That was a requirement that was missing in the case of Costa Rica, and that's precisely what Ambassador Figueres has just announced, that Costa Rica and Colombia will be entering into a free trade agreement today or tomorrow. It was the only, if you will, missing link there. So I think that, again, my personal view is that what really needs to be there is a true commitment to free trade, and not just a commitment and a free to free trade and to opening to belong to a process that's an open agreement rather than one that is closed to trade among just the members.
Just adding to what Ambassador Urrutia said, but you have to keep in mind that these are not only a flexible but also an open process. So the second issue is that this is not a political forum. So you shouldn't expect that this initiative or this group is going to come up with political statements. The only requirement for a country to join in terms of political standing would be to ratify the Charter of the Pacific Alliance, which is to show full respect for democratic principles. But after that, as Ambassador Urrutia said, you need to have free trade agreements with the rest of the members. And I would say that's mainly what it takes. And the third thing that I would like to say, when I said it is open, it's truly open, and so much so that we are not only receiving observers' applications from different countries from all over the world, in New Zealand, Australia, Japan, Canada, but also from countries that belong to the Mercosur, like Uruguay. And even the Mercosur is also asking to become as an observer. So we are not also seeing ourselves as competitive, as a competitor of Mercosur, but also could be a joining force, who knows? But it's as open as that.
Yes, of course, my colleagues have been extremely clear. Free trade is the key issue in this process, and at the same time, not being the Pacific Alliance a political structure, of course, we have to share the same values. I mean, democracy and respect and promotion of human rights. But we have begun the process, and the process is amazing by itself. But what is even more amazing is the interest that the Pacific Alliance has created in the world. Ambassador Bulnes mentioned many countries, and for instance, Mercosur wanting to join as an observer. That happens with the European Union, with countries like Japan, like New Zealand, like Australia. Even here in the United States, there is a tremendous interest. This initiative of CSIS shows that the interest is real. And at the same time, we don't really know how this process is going to evolve in the long run. But we expect something very big to occur. I mean, all our four countries which began this process are, I think, making history.
Yes, just very briefly, I would like to underscore the ambitious nature of the initiative. I mean, it seems easy, but it truly is very ambitious to promote the free movement of goods, services, capital, and people. So evidently, countries that want to join must be earnestly interested in and committed to the very ambitious agenda we have set out for ourselves.
Great. I'd like to open it up now. Ambassador, right here.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much, Carl, for putting this on, and congratulations to all of your countries for this very impressive undertaking and the great progress you've made so far. David Nelson with the General Electric Company. I have actually two quick questions. First of all, from the perspective of a U.S. company, the United States already has FTAs with all of your countries. What are the potential benefits to U.S. companies from the Pacific Alliance? Is it in the movement of people, perhaps, for long-term assignments of, people go fix generators or something like that? Or is it where is the benefit for U.S. companies? And then the second question, which relates to the comment that you made about the openness and cooperation with other countries, just out of curiosity, are your colleagues, your counterparts in Brasilia doing a similar presentation? I think it would be interesting. Thank you.
Well, I would submit to you that for the U.S., there are, concrete interests for being, first of all, an observer eventually. But for U.S. companies, many U.S. companies have already subsidiaries in the region. Throughout the member nations, many U.S. companies are already established. And for those companies that are already established, aside from the fact that the U.S. has free trade agreements with each of the members of the alliance, those U.S. companies will be able to benefit from what the alliance has to offer by way of free movement of goods, services, eventually people, and capital. There are evident advantages in participating in those and in taking advantage of those.
Just one side effect that I could mention also following Ambassador Urrutia's remarks is that also between the four countries, we are seeking to achieve common norms, common rules. So this harmonization process also is going to have an impact on your agencies or subsidiaries that you could have in the region, and that pays off. And in a more global perspective, I would say that for the U.S. to have stronger partners is always good. So to have four countries or five countries as from tomorrow, we hope, that have a better standing, of course, it gives and opens more opportunities.
Great. Over here. You know what? We're having a little battery issue. So if you could just come up to the table here, and there's a microphone right here. Oh, I'm sorry. Ambassador Forsyth.
Yes, David. Could you repeat your remark about Brazil?
That it's not a competitive group, but I think that there are countries in the region that would benefit from learning more about the benefits that you all see from openness of trade, free trade, and so forth. And my question is how much of essentially how much reflection are you seeing in Brazil to the development of this? I think it's the conference that you're doing today here is very important. I think a similar conference in major Mercosur countries would also be a positive.
Well, as has been said, the Mercosur by itself is joining our organization as an observer. So that's the first step. And it has also been said that, for instance, a small but very meaningful country, you were ambassador there, Uruguay, was the first to join the Pacific Alliance as an observer. And that has a tremendous meaning for us. Now, about your other comments, it has also been said that our alliance aim is to just put barriers out completely. Well, not completely, 90%. And to make an agreement in order to go to 100% elimination in the next 7 years. So that will mean a common market. And a common market is not a joke. A common market of five countries, and who knows, in the next few months, probably six or even more. So the American companies will have a tremendous challenge working not for us, but with us. As President Biden said just 2 weeks ago in the Council of the Americans speech. The level of origin is amazing. So the challenges for American companies will be very much improved with this task.
I think Ambassador Forsyth meant Vice President Biden. For now, right?
I'm sorry, Carl. Yeah, you're right.
Sir.
Yes, hi. My name is Alex Sanchez from the Council of Hemispheric Affairs. This question is actually for Ambassador Forsyth. Peru has enjoyed a great economic growth in the past few years, but in the end, it's really just a mining country. Gold, copper, zinc, those kind of minerals. And we have all heard about the protests, the deadly protests in Conga. There were protests in January in Cañariaco. March, there were protests in the Chinalco mine as well. So I'm guessing my question will simply be, how is Peru supposed to be remain a prominent and active member of the TPP if its economy is really just at the mercy of its mining? And one could argue that the moment that the mines dry up and stop producing gold, copper, and zinc, that the U.S. companies, the U.S. mentioned, are simply going to go elsewhere. Thank you.
Yes, there is a tremendous relation of our success with the mining sector, and there is some level of what you say, dependency. But that's not only the case of Peru. It's the case of many other countries. And it's the case of many other Latin American countries. We have problems, yes. We have had tremendous successes in the economic field, but we still have a very serious social pending agenda. We have poverty, we have inequality, and of course we have the task to diversify our economy. And this aim, this Pacific Alliance, will absolutely mean something in order to help our country in the fulfilling the task of the near future and the tremendous challenge that we face.
Ma'am.
Yeah. Hi, Susan Schmidt, Manette Jones Global Strategies. Two quick questions. One, is Panama on the same fast track for official candidate or member as Costa Rica is? And second, I also read somewhere that ASEAN had been invited to be an observer to the Pacific Alliance. What's been the reaction from ASEAN, and have they accepted that invitation?
Well, as far as I understand, Panama is likewise on the fast track to become a member. On your other question, I do not know of any invitation to ASEAN, really. But I don't know whether my colleagues may have something else to say on that.
Just adding something. Costa Rica is the most likely new member, as Ambassador Figueres already said. Panama is in a very good track, but they have to sign free trade agreement with two remaining members, so we don't expect that they will be joining in the near future, but again, they are the second most likely candidate to be joining the Pacific Alliance.
I'm going to go in the back here a little bit. Sir, with the black tie.
My name is Ben Beachy. I'm with Public Citizen, and my question is about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was raised a couple times already. This past weekend, the former Chile chief TPP negotiator, Rodrigo Contreras, published a statement in which he said that within the TPP, it was essential that there be flexibility preserved for the Latin American governments to be able to enact capital controls, environmental regulations, and to have a proper balance between investors and the state. And that it was important to have a strong negotiating position as Latin American countries within the TPP in the face of pressures from northern countries, as he put it. So the question is, the United States has, of course, put forward an investment chapter within the TPP which would ban capital controls, and that would expand the mechanism that allows the investor-state mechanism that allows foreign corporations to directly challenge a government over environmental policies or health policies in extrajudicial tribunals that can authorize taxpayer compensation. Mexico is obviously very familiar with this. About 200 million have already been lost to foreign corporations into the system in Mexico. My question to you is: do you, mainly for Chile, Peru, and the Mexican and representatives, do you take Contreras' advice? Is this do you plan to form a strong negotiating position in the TPP in the face of pressures from the United States to accept its perpetuation of the investor state?
Well, as you know, the negotiations about TPP are private or secret, so to speak, so we cannot go into specifics, but you were asking whether we are planning to form some bloc in order to face some or to have a sort of a common standing vis-a-vis certain issues. And I think this is not the approach that we have been taking. I think each country is raising its own matter of concerns, and what we expect is to have the proper flexibility of all members, all of the TPP members, in order to reach the final agreement and to be able to compromise. And this is not new to this process. In any multilateral negotiations, you will face that there are certain aspects that create some tensions, but what we see that at the end, taking the multilateral approach, we will be able to achieve the proper compromise, and that we will be able to achieve this compromise in this very ambitious agenda or schedule we have, which is, you know, to have this agreement done or finished by October of this year.
Anybody else want to add? No? Okay. Herbert?
Herbert Torres with the Gallup Organization.
No? Okay. Herbert Torres with the Gallup Organization. I have a very short question. First, is Colombia planning to join the TPP in any near future? What's the reason that it hasn't done so? Second question is, how do you see that free trade negotiations, possible free trade agreement between the United States and the European Union? Is a possibility that Mexico forms part of that as a big bloc, NAFTA, and negotiating with the European Union? And my third question is, if you have to picture long-term vision 10, 15 years ahead for Latin America, what do you see in terms of level of integration, not only of TPP countries, but the entire, let's say, Latin America? Do you see the dream of all Latin America integrated into a common market?
Well, I can take up the first question. Colombia has many times expressed its interest in joining TPP. It has expressed that interest to certainly our colleagues in the Pacific Alliance, who are already members of TPP, and likewise to the United States, for instance. And in essence, the response that we have gotten really is that the member countries of TPP have a task at hand in front of them, which is to conclude negotiations on the agreement, and that unless and until they are able to finalize that, they're really not ready to look at new members, but that they would welcome the occasion for Colombia to join once the negotiation has been concluded, and of course subject to going through the process for eventually inviting Colombia, I mean for formally considering Colombia's aspiration to join. That's what I can say about Colombia joining TPP.
Yes, thank you. On the U.S.-EU negotiations, the government of Mexico are following them very closely, And we have expressed on several occasions to the U.S. government that it would make eminent sense to negotiate as a group of countries and not individual countries. Mexico has a trade agreement with the European Union and also with EFTA, European Free Trade Association. Canada is finalizing negotiations with the European Union. And next January, it'll be 20 years since the entry into force of NAFTA. You know, the North American region is deeply, deeply integrated. Canada is the first trade partner of the U.S. Mexico is the third trade partner and second destination of U.S. exports. We not only sell to each other, but we produce jointly to sell to the region and to sell to third markets. So we just believe it makes absolute eminent sense to look at this regionally and not on a country-by-country basis.
Here, here. In the back row here.
My name is Barbara Kachwar. I'm with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And first of all, I just want to thank Carl and Michael and CSIS team for a wonderful event. I think this is the best Latin America trade event I've seen in a long time. So thank you, ambassadors and Dr. Ortiz Mena. I have two short questions, hopefully shorter than the other questions. One is, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about which industries would gain the most from having this regional integration as a platform for global supply chains. And secondly, there was mention of the word common market, and I wonder whether you would elaborate whether you're thinking about harmonizing external tariffs or whether this meant more a common economic space. Thank you very much.
If you don't go, I'm going to pick on you. So, Ambassador Forsyth should go first. Okay.
Yes, thank you, Carl. Sure. I will only refer to your second remark about the common market, because I think I was the one who mentioned that. When we speak about common market, we mean just that. Common market in the style created by the original, by the Treaty of Rome of 1957. So what we want is a real common market with total free circulation of people, goods, capital, and services.
And common external tariff.
Common external tariff will be a principle which will have to be debated because it relates to economic policies. So common external tariffs have been a failure in the past in some of our regional or multilateral efforts. But we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Perhaps it will be necessary to do that or not. That I cannot tell you. Perhaps nobody knows that. But the aim of a common market is in place.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go back to the crowd. Right here, yeah. Great.
Hi, my name is Yuritia Costa. I am with CRDF Global. One of our initiatives is to support entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurship ecosystem, and I think this type of things that you're doing really builds the ecosystem at the regional level. So I wanted to ask you about more details of how you facilitate the movement of the entrepreneurs to go and move to the new markets in your respective countries, but also the investment and how do you facilitate those? How are the laws implemented? What are the changes that you have been seeing since the start of your work?
Ambassador Urrutia.
Well, there is already a very dynamic flow of investment among the four members. It goes beyond that, but there is quite a lot of movement as far as trade and investment among the four nations that are already members of the alliance. Colombia, for instance, is an important destination for Chilean investment, but likewise from Mexico, I would submit to you that the region has become one of the leading, if you will, investors into Colombia. We see Chilean companies, Peruvian companies, Mexican companies coming to Colombia and making substantial investments and acquiring businesses. And likewise, Colombian investors are going abroad, both to all of those three markets. So I think that as far as fostering investment and trade, I think, you know, that's precisely what it's all about. And it's already happening.
And regarding small and medium companies, I think I'm more than positive that the four countries plays an important importance on these small and medium companies. And all these barriers that have been removed between the four countries are not only going to help the big companies, which sometimes they have the force and the sources to overcome these kind of difficulties, but I would say the biggest impact is going to be on the medium and small companies, because they are the ones who benefit the most every time the red tape and the harmonization of rules take place.
Yes, I think that by radical reducing transaction costs to trade and investment within the region, it will be attractive, you know, for SMEs, as Ambassador Bulnes said, but also for large corporations. Dave Nelson was asking, you know, what's in it for U.S. companies? Well, you know, there are lots of economies of scale that you can exploit. It's not only shipping from the U.S. to the region, but hopefully investing in the region. I'm doing sort of investment promotion now. You invest invest in the region to make, you know, best use of our resource endowment, both human capital and natural resources, to sell to the region, to this new market, and to also to sell to the Asia Pacific with the key links that some of these countries have. So I think it'll be a boon for investment towards the region.
All the way in the back here. Microphone, yeah.
I'm Chris Wilson with the Mexico Institute at the Wilson Center. And my question, hopefully my question is not too far in the weeds. I'd like to ask about rules of origin, and especially vis-a-vis the United States, which I know is something that hasn't been touched on. But first of all, within the region, within the grouping of countries that make up the Pacific Alliance, will there be an accumulation of rules of origin? So if a product is, you know, made with raw materials from Chile and then put into a manufactured good in Mexico, would that product, you know, would that value added from Chile get to be counted into Mexico's exports to, say, Colombia, for example? And then my sort of pushing it further suggestion or question would be, you know, has the grouping thought about trying to negotiate something along those lines with the United States, given that there are free trade agreements already in place between each of your countries with the United States? It seems like a real area of opportunity to be able to jointly use each of your pieces of the supply chain and then gain preferential access with the combined amount of value added for your countries to the United States market, and vice versa, obviously.
Antonio?
Yeah. We are addressing the accumulation of rules of origin. Of course, we don't know what the sort of final agreement, specific agreement will be, but this is a key part of integration agreements. If you don't have a common external tariff, which we don't, in FTAs, you need, by definition, rules of origin. So what we will be doing is to address the issue of accumulation of rule of origin with a view to facilitating, you know, cross-regional production. These are very technical and complex negotiations, but incredibly, incredibly important.
No. Anyway, right here, sir.
Is this one on? Yes. Great. Thank you. Andrew Mack from AM Global Consulting here in Washington. I, first of all, would like to congratulate everyone. This is a really, really inspiring initiative, and it's very, very impressive on a number of levels. The question that I have relates to a conversation that I was involved in a couple of days ago about commerce and connections between Latin America and Africa. And specifically thinking about the model that you've got here, two questions. Number one is, do you think that this is a model that could be exported to other parts of the world, and would that help? And second of all, given that there is a desire to grow well beyond just the Pacific Alliance countries themselves, is this a common platform that might be used to reach other growing parts of the world that might otherwise be very difficult for each individual country to reach?
Ambassador Bulnes.
Well, I would say that we are very humble in terms that we are not in a position to give recipes to other regions or countries. What we can say, it works for us. So that tells something. And in the case of Chile, I would like to mention that we have signed more than 20 free trade agreements with more than 55 countries. So we really think that open trade, free trade is the way to go. So in that sense, in this high-level kind of approach, I would say that the more integration the countries achieve, the better position they are in order to prosper.
Mr. Figueres.
Yes, I think that we mustn't constrict or constrain the goals of the alliance to reaching out to the Pacific. We also think that it's a good platform to reach Africa and other areas that we have yet not developed economic relations with. Certainly for a country like Costa Rica to have a platform that's this big to reach Africa is a considerable advantage. So the underlying philosophy here, I think, is that there is advantage in numbers when they are congruent economic models.
Great. Ambassador Forsyth, first.
Yes, thank you, Carl. In relation to your question, I just wanted to finish to say something about the common market issue that the lady mentioned about the external common tariff. With the tremendous changes that are taking place in the world with a free trade agreement that we, for instance, with Colombia have with the European Union, with this TPP process and with these free trade agreements within our own regions, with our Pacific Alliance, the option of having an external common tariff is not interesting anymore. So perhaps in the case of Africa, as Ambassador Figueres said, there is a pending option for our countries. And the Brazilians have done a lot in that regard. We haven't, but we have to do something. We're also humble, as Ambassador Bulnes said. We don't really think that we are in a position to export our model. But there are some very interesting initiatives in Africa, for instance, in Namibia, Botswana, and other countries related to this effort of created an initiative which is more or less close to ours. So it would be a good idea to establish an initial link in order to open our minds to Africa, which is a continent with an impressive future.
Master?
Sure, the question sure. from the Peterson Institute sure. about industries that would be favored by the alliance. Obviously, industries that are most integrated into global value chains. And I think the challenge for the countries is to trigger as much vertical integration as possible within their local markets so that local companies of all sizes and shapes get hooked into this process and get access to the global market by virtue of being linked to this very large platform. I think that's probably a great challenge that this not become a closed circuit for multinational corporations and period. The corporations have to benefit from this. That's very obvious. But we need to link other companies in our countries, local companies and locally owned companies, to these chains.
Yes, on the Africa question, I just wanted to recall a brief remark from Ambassador Urrutia at the outset that the alliance countries will be joining forces to, you know, open a mission in Ghana. That this is just one of the, I guess, unexpected, unforeseen synergies that come from really working together between like-minded groups. That's just a specific instance.
Okay. Kevin.
Thanks, Carl. Kevin Sullivan from the State Department's Western Hemisphere Bureau. Just a couple of comments and then a question. First of all, congratulations to Carl on a great event and on your new spot here at CSIS. I think you're already showing what value added you're bringing. This is a terrific event. In fact, I think the panelists have answered nearly all the questions that I would have asked anyway. But I also wanted to say thanks to all the panelists for the solidarity for our disaster in Oklahoma. It means a lot from close partners like you. I mean, the fact that we are close partners is evidenced by some upcoming presidential visits that we've got. I'm sure have you all working very hard, and recent presidential visits in Costa Rica. So I think the Yeah, in Mexico as well. Thank you. He was out of my field of vision, that's all. In fact, I think that one thing we certainly would want to underscore is that the shared principles that bring the Alliance of the Pacific together are very much principles that the United States shares. And that's one of the many reasons why we think that this is an extremely positive initiative for the people in your own countries, as well as for the region as a whole. We think it's certainly an excellent model and demonstration effect for all of Latin America and the Caribbean. And the U.S., as many of you know, has engaged with the Alliance of the Pacific already. Former Secretary Clinton met with the members of the Alliance at the last Summit of the Americas. And I would anticipate that there'll be future engagement as well. It's a grouping that brings together some of our best friends in the region and countries with which we have important economic and political things in common. And I also like to congratulate Costa Rica on joining, if that is indeed the case, in Cali. That's a very big event, would underscore the fact that we have North American, Central American, and South American members in the same agreement and same organization. So I guess the only question left is, now that we've identified Panama as the next likely candidate, who's after that?
I'm going to keep on picking on people. So now I'm going to pick on Ambassador Urrutia.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I can't tell you who's after that. But what we can see is that there are several countries from Central America that have already expressed interest in joining, at least on the basis of observer status. For instance, Guatemala and Honduras. That we can say. Which country is next? You know, our crystal ball is a little foggy today.
All right. Any other questions back here? Let's just come onto the table. I think thanks.
Hi, my name is Juan Pablo Pitarque. I'm here as a concerned Ecuadorian citizen, I guess. You know, just looking at the la potencia que será esta o es esta alianza, did Ecuador miss an opportunity? Granted that it has requested observer status, did it miss that original window? Thank you.
I mean, I think these are complicated questions, but it would be helpful to get a sense of if I'm assuming that there's still opportunities for countries to be able to come in at different times, it's something that, you know, now you're getting a lot of folks that want to be members of it. So I guess if that process is going to be harder and harder now because you're getting more and more interest, and, you know, what you talked about with the Ghanaian example shows sort of the breadth and reach. I'm not trying to avoid your question, but could you talk a little bit about, you know, you've had the seventh meeting, you have Costa Rica and Panama coming in. Talk a little bit. I think Gerbert Torres, who's here, asked, what's the vision going forward? I think this could be helpful in answering in your question. I think it's a difficult question to ask to answer, but could you talk a little bit about the vision of the of the alliance going forward? Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Well, of course, the vision is, again, this is an open process. This is an open process, it's really a young initiative, really. It's been there for only 2 years. It's already accomplished a number of things that that we have all pointed to this morning. So in 5 years' time, there will clearly be, judging from the fact that there are already a number of observer nations that have joined as observer countries, clearly that will eventually bring aspirations to join the group, to join the alliance. And so, at least as far as I am concerned, I would say that in 5 years' time, I certainly think that the group will have expanded substantially, because that's what it is. It has already shown the fact that we were only four nations that got together 4 years ago, or 2 years ago, rather. Costa Rica will be joining, probably Panama, sooner rather than later. In 5 years' time, the group should have expanded, and perhaps even countries that do not necessarily belong, if you will, to Latin America. But beyond that, that's what I foresee happening.
Mr. Bulnes?
Yeah, I just want to add, in line with what Ambassador Urrutia already said, but two things. First, regarding the Ecuador case, of course, the doors are always open, and so if they haven't said anything yet, doesn't mean that they are precluded to do so in the future. But regarding the observers, I would say that becoming an observer doesn't mean a future will to become a member of the Pacific Alliance. We see that some countries will remain as an observers, and maybe they will try to establish a dialogue with the bloc without willing to become members. And so we cannot predict that any country that today is an observer will be a member. And let me give you just one reason for that. Part of the scope of the Pacific Alliance is the free flow of movement of people. No visa requirement between the countries. And for some countries, that is going to be an objective out of their own scope, just to give one reason. So what is going to happen 5 years from now? Maybe we will see that some observers became members. Some countries that haven't said anything so far about the alliance will become observers and members, all the combinations.
Okay. Ambassador Forsyth?
Yes, I just wanted to mention before I forget it, something about the Ghanaian concept that was expressed by Ambassador Urrutia and another person have mentioned that. It's extremely interesting that one of the principles of the Pacific Alliance is to the option that is open to our five members, let's say, to share or a common diplomatic or commercial representation in some countries in the world. One case is the Ghanaian example, for instance, and the other one would be the embassy of Peru to the Social Republic of Vietnam, open to be shared by other of our members. The interesting thing is that I have personally never seen this in any system in the world, nor even the European Union have been able to achieve that. They have an office of the European Union, an embassy of the European Union, which is separated from the embassies of the state members, but they haven't done that. So let's see what happens in the future with this idea that we are ready to begin. Well, let me also express that we have to be careful. I hope this doesn't become a trend, because instead of having five ambassadors here, we will finish having only one. But I hope I will be the one to be chosen.
Ambassador Figueres, did you want to say something?
Yeah, it's a kind of muddled statement I'm going to make, that Herbert Torres asked a question that I don't think any of us has completely addressed. Okay. What are the prospects in terms of Latin America? And I think he meant also world trade. And I think we can all agree that we're living in very confusing times, because you have on the one hand the WTO in a certain kind of crisis with new leadership coming on. We'll see what happens with it. You have the U.S. and Europe negotiating an agreement which will necessarily involve NAFTA, the two Canada and Mexico partners of NAFTA. You have this Pacific Alliance. You have the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. With China there, will it eventually become part of TPP or will it not? So these are very confusing times. I just wanted to contribute in case anybody didn't know it, because the spaghetti bowl is getting infinitely more complicated. And what I would hope is that we are also living in times in which, big picture in any case, free trade will become increasingly recognized as a vehicle for sound development, not exclusive development and not polarizing development, but actually a vehicle for achieving much better social development within our countries. And maybe we will, over the long run, all understand better how it can be used intelligently to achieve that.
Sir, in the back.
Hey, good morning. My name is Andres Montalvo from the Embassy of Ecuador. So, so you can imagine I could.
So you can answer that question.
A little bit, Mr. Tarque. But before that, let me express our condolences to the people of United States for the tragedy in Oklahoma. What I could mention is that Ecuador has really close ties with all the members of the alliances. We have a free trade agreement with Colombia and Peru as part of the Andean community. We have a free trade agreement, we call it differently, with Chile, which is it only has a few exceptions as to the services area in goods. And we have also trying to start close negotiations with Mexico. Certainly, we have invited to countries of Central America to start negotiations. We have an agreement for to start with Guatemala, but we would like to expand that. So this is one point I wanted to mention. The second point is that probably as part of the spaghetti bowl that was Ambassador Figueres mentioning, we have expressed officially our intent to negotiate an agreement with the European Union. So this is a very important step that Ecuador is taking right now. And our intention is to finish this agreement by the end of this year. So you can see that President Correa, in its first term, really tried to put the basis for human development, for investment in infrastructure, and he is starting its second term this May 24th. And Vice President Jorge Glass is going to take a very important leadership in this new process that we are opening. So, Mr. Pitarque, what I would say, and to all other Ecuadorians as well, that we are in a process to look at this kind of initiatives, and certainly we are doing very, very concrete steps to go into positive, again, steps, not just rhetoric. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Any more questions? Ma'am?
Thank you. My name is Jeannie Nguyen with Voice of Vietnamese Americans. I thank the ambassador for mentioning the tie with Vietnam as its beginning. And I would like to take this point to come back to ASEAN, the question with ASEAN. Would that be in the future vision? And also, what are you thinking of the ties with China and India? Both are very strong and big market in Asia. Thank you.
Yes, and I hope Vietnam opens embassies in our countries too. So that process is still pending, and we follow it closely. Now, in the case of China and in the case of India, several of our countries, for instance Chile, for instance Peru, have a free trade agreement with China. And several of our countries, for instance Peru, have begun serious talks with India in order to do the same. So we're open to that. That's a pending issue also. And as it has been said, we look forward to increase several options in the world.
Anything else on relationships with Asia?
Yeah. No, again, the focus really is the Pacific Basin. So the name of the alliance shows, you know, what it is that we want to get to. And so clearly trade investment relations with China, with India, throughout all of the Pacific, throughout the Pacific Rim is, you know, one very important objective of the whole exercise. No question about it.
Okay. We have about 30 seconds left. Is there any other question? One more question here, and we're going to wrap up. If you could hit your microphone there. Great.
Hi, my name is Christine Guzman. I'm a graduate student from George Mason University. I had one question. I'm Colombian, and, you know, being in the United States makes it clear that trade integration is the way to go. I have no doubt about it. But I know that there's many cultural barriers from within each country because Latin America has a very nationalistic view with, like, the people. Is there any way that the countries will address the promotion of integration within each country? Because you always see protests and, I don't know, sometimes it's frustrating to see the unwillingness from the people from within the countries to understand the need for integration.
Ambassador Figueres.
Well, just briefly, nothing is harder to sell than free trade inside the borders. It is always a terrible thing. To go through a free trade agreement is like parturition, you know. And probably it's half justified because there is no free trade agreement that doesn't exclude somebody, doesn't damage somebody's interests. It's impossible to have a free trade agreement that is all inclusive just because all of the sectors of any economy are not competitive and cannot enter the world market. So it takes, I think, absolutely brilliant politicians to explain the benefits, which are often long-term, despite the terrible, terrible harm that can come short-term, to explain it to people, especially as their educational level goes down and their income level goes down. So once again, it just takes very, very, a lot of statesmanship to do it right.
Ambassador Bulnes?
Yes, and on top of that, I would like to add that in order to promote integration between the four countries, there are some initiatives like exchange student programs, the scholarships for the students to go to the other countries. I'm not saying that is the solution, but it helps. And on the other hand, if we achieve the benefits that we are looking for, that tends to be the best reasons to convince people that this kind of integration effort really pays off.
Great. And with that, I want to thank Ambassador Urrutia, Ambassador Bulnes, Ambassador Forsyth, Ambassador Figueres, and Mr. Ortiz Mena for coming and for this session. It's been very interesting, very enlightening. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And I look forward to seeing you all at another event. Thank you for coming.